pages on assignments 1, 2, 3, or 4. Yes. Everything is inherited by a subclass from a superclass that is not private. Any variable or method that has a private access specifier is not inherited. Everything else is inherited. Public, protected, and default, or package access. Yes. Go over sending messages, which is another way of saying calling functions. So, if I have a class here, there's a fairly simple class. And there's a really simple class. Noel.
That's why instead of being a super class or subclass, but you actually inherit all the.
You don't inherit anything. You get to use it. You have it available to you, but you haven't inherited it. Well, the difference is that. Those methods in A don't belong to B. The variable A belongs to B, but the methods belong to class A. If B extended A, it would get method 1, method 2, and method 3. Right, and it wouldn't necessarily use them for anything. Other people from outside would be using them. Much as B is using the methods from A. So, interesting point in terms of program speak. This is called composition. When you have things, variables and methods and whatnot, you're composed of those. That's composition versus inheritance. Inheritance is like student inherited name from the person class. A student is a person and therefore has its methods and variables. That's inheritance. This is known as composition. Yes?
The third line,
what is that? Where? That is the declaration of a variable of type A. Remember, these classes are just data types. just like int and double and float. They're used in exactly the same way.
So it doesn't have to be a constructor to be
I don't have to have a constructor. The constructor actually gets called here. See that? Those parentheses there, that's a function call. It calls the constructor method. I didn't write a constructor method, so the compiler wrote one for me. It's not a null, it's the default constructor. It's a no op. It doesn't do anything. But the code actually goes there and comes back. Yeah, there's a phantom constructor here. That the compiler puts in for me if I don't supply it.
Do you need to have that recorded so that we can?
Yeah, now the original topic that he asked was, what's this message, sending messages stuff? Okay, this line of code and this line of code are examples of sending messages between this object and this object. In this case, I call method 1 and I pass it a number. A copy of that number 3 goes into that object, which is really just a piece of code right there. In this case, I'm sending it another message. I'm sending it the message that says, I want the string back from method 2. The print is going to print the word hi. So here the code says, go over here and return to me whatever value method 2 returns. Okay? And that's all that is. And you remember, it's just words for call a subroutine. It's object-oriented speech for call a procedure, call a subroutine, call a function. They just call it sending a message. But it's exactly what you're already using in other languages. In order to do it, I have to have an instance of that class available to me. The little a here is an instance of class big A. And here I've instantiated it, meaning I created the instance and brought it into being. Now I send it a message, now I send it another message. I'm also sending the system class a message, and I didn't instantiate it. How can I get away with that? Thank you. This variable in the system class is static. Therefore, I do not need an instance of the class in order to use it. This is called a class variable. Okay? If A had a static method, imagine, if you will, that I had written this first, then I could actually have said, and this is just a tad confusing, but bear with it. I could have said capital A dot method 1. What? Even if I didn't have the line above it. Because a static method, you're allowed to use it without an instance of the class. It's just talk. But it actually means something in the code. If you see a dot method and the program compiled all right, you can then surmise that that is a static method. Well, that's an important point, right? I see all kinds of garbage that won't compile. So I surmise nothing, right? So you could have a broken compiler.
Yeah.
Assuming that our compilers are well, and I've seen very few examples of the compilers being broken, and many, many, many fewer examples of the hardware being broken, circumstances, I can bet that that is a static method. Therefore, I don't need an instance of the class to use it. Take the word static away, that's why it's called an instance method. Now I have to use little a, which is the variable of type A. Well, the answer is yes. I can call method 1 from inside A just by saying in method 2, say method 1. I could even say method 1 inside method 1, but my program would keep running if I ever called it, because it would make a loop. From class B, I have no way to get to class A without having an instance of class A. Later on, when I say later in this class, I mean, you know, like day after tomorrow kind of thing. Well, in Monday, because a reminder, we don't have class on Thursday. Did you all hear that? Write that down. You can still pretend to come to school, but I won't be here. Later on, we are going to learn that there are things called events and listeners, which allow you to call methods indirectly. There are actually a variety of mechanisms for calling methods indirectly. But, in general, A, in order for it to communicate with B, has to be an instance inside B. Otherwise, B doesn't know anything about that data type or its methods. Little a is the instance. Big A is the data type. Little a is an instance of big A.
Okay. And even if
you have an instance,
is there already a way
besides the fourth line of the right hand side to call it or make it the wrong way? That's it. Yeah, otherwise, if I just put method 1, the compiler is going to go, I can't find method 1 in class. Because remember, the assumption that the compiler makes is if it doesn't see what class it is, it means you're in the class.
If there were a method 1, if his class tree were extended class 2, if there were a class 3 that had a method 1, and there was no A dot,
then it would call class C's method 1 because it inherited it.
Right.
And if B had a method 1, you could say method 1 and it would call its own method 1. We're going to see examples of all of this when we hit assignment 5. We're going to be doing all these things at once. We're going to have to learn like 3,000 things. Well, you are. I say we. Because, yeah, exactly. Right. No, if class B extends A, then you can do that. Because they're your own methods, right? You inherited them from class A. That's inheritance. Yeah. No, method 3 is this block of code right here. Method 1 is this block of code right here. What's this 3?
Yeah,
what I'm doing is I am sending this value 3 to this function for some reason. I'm not doing anything in here, so you don't know. It's this int arg. It's an argument. So So this 3 is being communicated to this method for some use, we hope. Yeah. You can't use a non-static variable in a static method. Unless it's a local variable. It's got to be either a local variable or an argument. You'll get a compiler error. It'll say attempted to use a non-static variable in a static method. You guys, some of you have already got that with main. No, if you have a variable in the body of a method, it's a local variable, that's fine. It's when you have an instance variable and you try to use an instance variable in a static or class method, it's not allowed. Yes? No. If it's private, it's just that. If I change this to private, it's not only not inherited, it's not accessible. This line of code here will generate an error that says I can't get there from here. Then you can only use it in class A, and that line of code goes away. So that's a good question. We simplified our code. We made it even more useless than it was before.
You can put a method in A that was public, but then call method 1.
Yes, I could call in method 2, I could say, blah, 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 whatever we had there before, and I could put an argument in here, and just because they have the same name doesn't mean that these are just placeholders. It's just to show you the data type. Then what I could do over here, because method 2 is public, I can call method 2, and method 2, because it's part of this class, is allowed to call method 1. So that's an indirect way to get to method 1. And that's the whole idea behind having public methods and private methods and so on, is it allows you to hide your data from the rest of the world except as they go through some filter.
Or if you control access to methods, so if you don't wind up with one variable or one action occurring by itself.
Right.
If you had another method, 3, that logically had to occur along with 1, you could inhibit an outsider from causing 1 to occur along.
Right. That inhibiting the outsider comes under my blanket word filter. You filter behavior, you filter values, you filter all kinds of things.
Can you overload a non-constructor? Do you have 2 methods with different types of arguments?
Yes. You can overload methods, and as some of you discovered last night, overloading is based on the arguments and not on the return type. So what we mean by overloading is I could have a second method too here. No argument. It's exactly the same as the constructor.
Right.
I can have as many methods with the same name as I want, as long as they have different arguments, either a different number of arguments or different data types. That is indeed called overloading. Yes. Now, if B extends A and I put a method 2 in here, I might as well just do it. In this case, it is called overriding. loaded. There are two of them. In B, when I do it, if I have exactly the same argument as the same function in class A, then what I have done is I have overridden that method 2. So that B method 2 with no arguments now takes precedence over A method 2 with no arguments. If I'm dealing with a B class, or I'm dealing with the A class, then the A method is.
But the A2 with the nth argument is still valid.
But the A2 method 2 with the nth argument is still valid in B.
Right.
But I could also override that. And what you're going to find out is when we do assignment 8 with polymorphism, that's exactly what you're going to be doing, is you're going to be creating methods, and then you're going to override them in the subclass, and you're going to call them through some mysterious mechanism called polymorphism. Yes? You mean B's method 2? Or A's method 2? Yeah, you can just call it. Just call method 2. That's okay. A and B are independent of one another. Remember the way this language works there. If I have a B, B dot method 2 uses this one. If I have an A dot method 2 uses that one. If I have a B stored in an A, it uses this one, but you don't figure out how it happened. I can't remember. Depends on what I said a minute ago. If I have a little b stored in a big A, then we'll check this out when we get to polymorphism. We're actually going to talk about polymorphism a little bit tonight. There was another question. This is really confusing stuff, isn't it? Yeah. Right. B doesn't inherit it. Private means it's not inherited. It's only available in the class where it's declared or defined or whatever the word is. I know how to do it with my fingers, but you know how programming, I'm in an odd situation of having to explain all of this because programming is actually a manual skill, right? Like building a boat. So it's at the best of times it's confusing to talk about programming. At the worst of times, well, we'll wait and see, the worst of times. We haven't got there yet. Assignment 5 is the worst of times. Other questions before we press on through the fog here? Yes. In assignment 4? Well, what I did in my assignment 4, remember the one I did last night, was I took the get number class and I converted it to a class called get anything, and I added a method called get string or string input or something. And basically what I did to do that, I had to return a string, and it was called string input. And here was the prompt that you saw that said, you know, what's your name, whatever it said. And the code in here was pretty straightforward. You saw something that said, try, S equals BR dot read line. Catch. IO exception E. And then, you know, I print out, yikes, and, you know, something bad happened. And then I saw something called, finally, return S, like that. Well, what we're going to be doing in this class, starting with assignment 5, which is just around the proverbial corner, is we are going to be building user interfaces where we have text fields and text areas that erase themselves and everything gets all excited and things hop around. And we aren't going to be using the keyboard to get things. Fortunately, this exact identical code can be used in assignment 5 to read from a file. So, get it, put it together, use it. So, I add this function to my getNumber class from assignment 2. What I did was I just copied all of the code from the getNumber function over to assignment 4, made a new class called getAnything, threw that function into it, and then then I have my choice. If I have a string, and if I have an int, you use it. This calls the function that returns a string. This calls the function that returns a number. It doesn't have to be used in the same line where you declare these variables. I could declare those variables up there somewhere and then use this over and over and over. I can use this for the rest of the semester. Yeah. That's the prompt. That's what the user sees. They see blah, blah, and you go, oh, they want a string, or blah, blah, oh, they want a number. Blah, blah will be, what's your name? And the next one will be, how old are you? Yeah. Then you don't have to import assignment 2. That's what I did last night. I showed how well importing, I just copy the whole thing over and modify it because we're going to use that in assignment 5. How did your import assignment 3s go for those of you who had an assignment 3 to import? Didn't that work nicely? Weren't you just really happy that you didn't have to type all that stuff over again or cut and paste it? Okay, let me just go over the syntax of this briefly. It looks like a lot, but there's actually nothing to it. This try is called a try block. Why is it called a block? Yeah, it has braces. And in fact, those curly braces behave exactly the way all the other curly braces you've used so far were. They're a scope. You could declare variables here, and the scope of the variables would be local to that block. You're going to run into that later on in the semester when you're using these because you'll put a variable in here and suddenly not be able to use it down here. Why? Because it's a different block. Yeah. Same with this catch block here. Okay? What this is the exception handling mechanism in Java. An exception is an error. So it's an error handling mechanism. What you try to do when you write programs is when your programs run into problems, when they run into problems, you anticipate the problems and try to have your program solve the problem gracefully somehow. So we'll learn some steps toward doing this. In any case, the mechanism in Java is called the try-catch. It's exactly the same as the try-catch in C++, if you already know about that. Basically, it says, do some code in this block, and if something bad happens, go down and see if there's a catch for that exception. Catch means do this instead of that if an exception occurs. In this case, the readline method generates an I/O exception if there's a problem. So you as a programmer have to do one of two things. You either have to catch the I/O exception, and all you have to do is this code. That's what that means. You caught it. You didn't do anything about it. Maybe you print out a message that says, oh no, I don't know what to do about this. And if there's an error here, the code transfers to here. The finally block says, regardless of what happens, do this. Okay? That's it. That's the syntax of that. I can't say anything more about it right now. Yes? There's specific keywords. Try is a keyword, catch is a keyword, finally is a keyword. If all of this puzzles you and you just can't bear it, you can get rid of all of this and you can just say return er.readline. Let's say you get up to the last week in class and you don't have time to type try-catch. Does that happen? You bet. Just be here. Bring a video camera on the last night of the semester up in the lab. It's great. And Kleenex. I usually bring Kleenex, but I ran out last semester. See, I can also do this. Stacy says, I don't know what to do about that. You deal with it, whoever you are. Whoever called me, you handle it. So br.readline actually throws an I/O exception that says, I'm not going to deal with it, you handle it. So I call readline. And now I'm responsible for it. I don't want it. It's like hot potato, so I throw it up there. Whoever calls this over here, then they have to handle it or else they have to throw it, and so on and so on and so on and so on and so on. Throws is a key word, which means I don't want to handle this exception. It's a baseball metaphor. Try, catch, throw. Yeah. In the number class, when you're doing the number input, you will see that there is something called the number format exception. If you type in ABC when you meant 1, 2, 3, that's a number format problem. Or a parse exception. What parse means? Something we have to learn here shortly. Parse. The compiler parses your program. You guys, no wonder you had so much trouble in English 101. Parse is when you go through and you find the parts of speech in a sentence, right? The grammar, break it down into parts. Well, the same thing happens with a number, right? If I write that number has to be parsed in order to find its bit value, right? How many hundreds, how many tens, how many ones? So we're going to learn how to parse ints, among other things. Yeah. BR is the buffered reader, which is inside the Get Anything class. It's really, in this case, connected to the keyboard. It's a variable which is of type buffered reader. Buffered reader is one of the 30 or so different input-output classes. There's a lot of input-output classes in Java. That's one of them. And that variable is of that type. And if you look in the Get Anything code, you'll see a place where I say buffered reader BR equals new buffered reader, and I pass it a file input stream, and I give that the system.in and so on. These are called wrapper classes. The way I/O works in Java is it goes from the minimum input size, data size, which is a byte, and then it treats bytes in more and more and more complicated ways. Right? Everything you do on a computer, you're basically dealing with bits and bytes. Right? No matter what language you're writing in, you're dealing with bits and bytes. So in this case, you get a bunch of bytes, you put them into a place in memory called cleverly a buffer, and then you go through those bits and bytes and you find a new line and you say, yay, I have a string. But it does it all for you. We'll learn how to do that with your switch assignment. There you go. Right now we just use it in assignment 5. We are going to use it in anger. Grr. Okay? Well, this has been very useful, huh? I mean, you guys have heard a lot of the stuff you've seen before. We're going to go over it again and again. And it doesn't hurt because we have a lot of slop in our schedule, meaning that we have fewer assignments than the allotted time if we took 2 days per assignment. But guess what happened? What did you discover with assignment 3? Some of you just went zoom, right through 3, zoom, right through 4. You're ready for 5. And the others, you went, clang, and you hit assignment 3 and went, oops. Well, it was easy, but now it's not. People say, how's your job? Well, it was easy, but now it's not. Because there's some things happening. You have to learn, you know, constructor methods, things called automatically, no argument, 2 argument, 3 argument, 4 argument. Instance variables, class variables, there's a lot to it. So don't panic yet. I'll tell you when it's time to panic. In the middle of the semester. When's the middle of the semester? A week from Wednesday. When's Wednesday? Tomorrow. It will be today. Tomorrow. Yeah. The midterm, the despised Java midterm, also known as the world's easiest test. It's open book, it's open notes, it's open everything except, well, you can even, you know, like eat and drink during it, but you just can't ask other people for the answer. Otherwise, I can't get a good calibration on the class. Fair enough, huh? You can use my desk that we have the midterm, and my computer if you want. You can browse the internet. What?
Is that open?
Yeah. So you can just go get your old Java test off the internet, download it, and hand it in. That's what my 101 class does. You know, this is 101 we're moving to. It's called Hybrid 101, where we have part of it is on the internet and part of it is in class. You know, part of it's online. And then there's a fully online 101 class. Well, sure enough, you sit there during the quizzes. Well, we as teachers have this, like, robo thing, you know, like a Big Brother monitor where I can flip to different computers and watch what's going on. and they all have like chat windows open. Oh yeah, certainly. Question number three. Well, my little sister knows that. Just a minute, let me see if she's online. I'll instant message. The good news is, like video games, the good news is they're still learning something, right? I mean, the whole idea is to get these computers to become communication devices, help you solve problems. So in that regard, they're learning something. What a job. Whatever. I just watch it all go by. Okay, let me think. Where are we at here? Vectors. We're about to get to a new topic. The new topic is vectors. This is where we left off last night. We'll do this a few minutes. I'll get you started, then you can go out and ponder what I just said, and when you come back, we'll go through it some more. What's the disadvantage of an array? The static size. Meaning whatever size you make it when you create it, that's how big it is, and you have to make a new one and copy it over if you want to change it. That's another disadvantage. Only holds one data type. That can be an advantage and a disadvantage. We'll see. We'll discuss that. It only holds one data type. It has very limited methods available to it. Okay? In this language, we have a lot of, what are they called? Collections, data collections. It's groups of data that behave in different ways. So there are vectors, and there are lists, and there are hash tables, and there are maps, and good grief. All we have to worry about in this end of the semester is the vector. If you take the advanced Java, then you have to learn about the other collections. That's the data type. In order to use that data type, you have to import the Java util package. So, what a vector is, in brief, is it's a collection of data which is of a variable size, which means that vectors can expand and contract as needed. And that turns out to be a really useful feature. Because then instead of an array, where an array is a fixed size, a vector starts off as no size. Well, it actually, they start off with a default of room for 10 things, but they don't have anything in them. So their initial size is zero. And see? And there are some different constructors where you could say, no, I want to start off with 100 things. You know, you pass it the number 100, and it'll start off with 100 things that aren't there versus 10 things that aren't there. And what happens is as vectors get larger, they start off, let's say, with 10 pieces, 10 holes to put things, and then they'll get 10 more and 10 more and 10 more at a time. Here you can say, I want to start off with 100 and get 100 more and 100 more. And it's an efficiency issue. In this class, we don't have any efficiency issues unless you're working on that side of the lab. But I saw last night we finally whittled ourselves down to few enough that we're all working on the fast side of the lab. Okay. Any of you guys know what pop beads are? No. See? You guys are all too young. There used to be a kind of a toy, and I haven't, my sister told me she was going to bring some out, but she hasn't yet. There probably aren't, but I'll have to pay top dollar on eBay. I just want the old ones that were down in the garage. Okay. Basically, what a vector is, is it's a chain of, what's that a picture of?
Objects.
It's a chain of objects. You can add objects to it, and you can delete objects from it. So it changes in size. It starts off with no objects at all. Just a place to put the objects. Okay? Now, that's an interesting thing. The data type that the vector stores is object. What do you know about that data type? I'm going to give you a hint. Thank you. You guys said it, but I wanted to see if more people would be brave enough to say it. It's the top of the hierarchy, all the hierarchies. It's the big O, as we call it, right? So, see how that... Okay. They're objects. That's the data type. That's the data type you put in. That's the data type you get back out. What's the problem with that? Does anybody here have any objects in your program so far? You've got cars, you've got vehicles, you've got buildings, you've got companies, you've got products, you've got all kinds of things. But none of you have any objects. Well, you have the closest thing to it, which is some type of thing and some other type of thing and some really little dinky other type of thing. And so, works. Very generic code. Yeah. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be storing objects in here, but the objects that we're storing in here are not type objects. So something peculiar has happened, right? You've just discovered something. What you have discovered is that if you have a hierarchy and you have a variable of a superclass type, you are allowed to store within that variable of the superclass type absolutely any subclass object. Well, big O object is the superclass of everything, which means it's a wild card. You can store any kind of object in there. The only problem you have, as you point out, is that when you get the object back out, you have to tell the compiler what kind of object you put in. And we'll look and see what code does that. There's another problem. If vectors only store objects, what can't you put in a vector? Primitive types. Primitive data types aren't objects, which means that you have to wrap primitive data types inside of an object somehow. And it turns out I'll let you fill in the blanks. This is the only ringer in the bunch. Right? An integer object will hold an int, a float object will hold a float, a double object will hold a double, and so on. So we'll look at the syntax for getting those. All right, we'll do that after the break, so you guys will be really keen on this. What we're going to do is we're going to go look at the vector class, we're going to look at its methods, how to put things into it, how to take things out of it. And then we're going to look at these wrappers of how to get the primitive data types into it and out of it and go through some of the issues. You can actually use this vector in your assignment 4 instead of an array. Or if you've already done it with an array, you can add a vector to it just to see how it works. Okay? So let's take a break for a bit, and when you come back, it'll be on through the fog. In this display, everywhere where the word VAR shows up, that's an object. everywhere where the word LOC shows up, that's a location, and vectors start counting locations from zero. So the first element in the vector is at location zero. What does this remind you of? Elements? It's like an array. So a vector really is just like an array, except that it changes size. And you can do some interesting things with it. Add element puts a new object at the end of the vector. So that's those circles. It's making the change. But insert element at, I can say go to this location and put the object just after it. That's useful, right? If you have an array and you want to insert something in an array, what do you have to do? The easy way to do it is to make a new array, or you have to copy everything over one place. If you have enough room, first you copy everything over one place and then you put the new value in. But in a vector, it does it for you. You just have to say insert at. Delete element at, you know, if you say delete element at 15, it goes to vector location 15 and deletes the element. Which element is location 15 represent? Element 16, because they count from zero. First element is same as element zero. Last element is the same as element size. Size is the method that returns how many elements are in the vector. Sorry, size minus one, thank you. Are you reading my old notes?
No.
Oh, you just remembered that from your head figuring it out. Yeah, size minus one. Set element at means replace the object that is at that element with a new object. That's it. What's that? Well, you had element at location, and you just iterate through them. Right? Okay. Add element, you pass it an object to add. Insert element, you pass it an object to add. Delete element, you just tell it where to delete it. First element, last element, element at, all return object. That's the data type of those methods. So you get an object out, a generic object. What's actually in that object, you have to know. When you do advanced Java, you will discover that there is actually a routine that you can go through to figure out what data type an object is. But it's really complicated and would cause you guys to burn your fuses out if you had to do it for this assignment, so we don't worry about it. In this assignment, what we do is we make our vectors all the same data type. So in my case, it would only be a vector of students. In assignment four, I wouldn't mix students and persons and teachers and grad students all in the same vector, though I could. I could even make a vector of vectors, right? Because an object, it's any object, so I could take a vector and make it a vector of vectors, and each of those vectors could have vectors in it, and so on. And make it really complicated, but there's no need to do that. We make it very simple, treat it just like an array. Okay, set element at, this word there means it's an object, so let's go put an object there. All right? Okay, so where there says can be any data type, it should say as long as it's an object, meaning it can't be a primitive data type. Must be object. And I'll change that. Okay. So here's the trick to this all. Okay. What's the problem? The problem is that the vector methods return object type. But when I get an object out, like a student object out, and I want the student to be able to call getName to get their name, and then getFirst to get the first name. So I want to know the first name of the student at such and such a location. But what I get out of element at is object, not student. So what I have to do is typecast. And this is what a typecast looks like. And I'll put it in big letters after I turn off the machine here. I am showing you guys this off of the handout to reinforce the notion that the handout is useful. This is what you would download. In any case, what this code means, last element means what? Whatever was the last object added to the vector, I get out the last element, and then I say, now interpret that element as a student, and call their setName method, or call their printName method. Okay? So here's the routine. This actually is assignment 4, using a vector. Vector students equals new vector. And then I just go through here, adding student, students.addElement. AddElement says put a new object. It can be any kind of object. And therefore, even though I say new student, the compiler realizes that student, because it is from the object hierarchy, will fit into an object. Because the type object is its superclass. This, whether you know it or not, is an example of polymorphism. Why? Because I have a variable of type object, and I am storing into it a variable of type student. So that variable type object is now taken on two forms. That's what polymorphism means, many forms. One form it's an object, and another form it's a student. Later on, we'll see how to use that with some power. Okay, one more thing I want to show you from the handout, and then I will go back to the board. Vectors of the primitive data types. Okay, an int. I'm not allowed to store an int in a vector because it's not an object. However, what I can do is I can make a capital I integer object, which is one of these wrapper classes. What does it do? It wraps an object around a value. So I say integer I equals new integer n. So what I've done is I have passed an int, the number 12, over to this integer class, and now I've created an integer object that I can put in a vector. Here's the vector. I add element, I add a new integer. A couple different ways of doing it. And I don't think into the vector value of the I into vector. I don't actually understand this line, so that's why I'm puzzling over it. What in the world did I write when I wrote that? This one is obvious. This creates I, this one here creates an object on the fly. We have seen that. And this here looks like what I'm doing is I am taking an int value and then I'm typecasting it back into an integer object. Whether that works or not, I'd have to try that. Yes. Do you have a comment or you just as puzzled as I am? I.int value should actually give me back an int, and then I'm converting it back into an integer. Think that will work? We'll see. I'll actually try this on the compiler. but I'll make that a note to look at that. The important thing here is that integer, float, double, char, byte, boolean, etc. all have wrapper classes. The only one that isn't spelled the same as the data type is int. The rest of them are spelled exactly like the data type, only with a capital letter. So you can put any kind of data type into a vector. Yeah, I can just do I by itself, and that would work fine. I'm looking at this line, and it's 5 years ago I wrote that. I'm thinking, what in the world was I doing 5 years ago? Fooling around, and no one tried it yet and said, why did you put that in your handout? So I have to read these things every year or two and see. In any case, that's not important. I'll figure that one. That's my problem, not your problem. Okay? Yes. That's correct. If you have a vector full of objects and you can figure out what kind of objects they are, then you can call any method in those objects. Right. Yeah, in fact, I had one student, shame on him, who did this last semester, and he had a user display and all of the bits and pieces that went into the user display were stored like this, and then he would pass that around, and then the display would build itself based upon what he wanted displayed at the time. It was an extremely clever program, and the person should actually be beaten and ostracized from society because he was only 14 or 15 and took the class. And I had to sit and puzzle over his program for a really long time. And I went, oh, I get it. I see what you're doing here. It was a very wickedly generalized program so that on the surface you couldn't tell it did anything, but when you ran it, it made all these displays with buttons and junk that came out. Oh, I do. I saved it, along with a lot of other things that students have written. Yeah. Okay, so let's just take a look very quickly at the syntax for typecasting, because that's the one thing that you're going to have problems with this vector stuff. You only have to typecast in one direction because of the idea of polymorphism. You don't have to typecast when you store things, only when you retrieve them and want to use their methods. So, I have my vector. And how do I put something into my vector? For example, in my program, I could say new student. And once again, I can use any of the constructors. So I could say what's the first name, what's their last name, what's their ID number, whatever. And then I can add that student with all of their valuable data to my vector. Okay? Now, that's both the first element and the last element. So if I wanted to access that student, I could say either or, and if I was in a loop, I could say element at whatever location I wanted. Okay. Now, what's the data type of either of those?
Object.
Object. Remember, these return an object. If they return an object, then the data type of that expression is type object. What I want to do is I want to make that into a student. And I then want to call getName. So the question is, what is the syntax to use this in a getName? First of all, what's the easy way to do it? I could have an instance of a student. Am I allowed to do that? You guys got an error last night. It was the most popular, it was like the error of the night last night. And a lot of people said, what is this error? And the error was type mismatch. What's that mean? Type mismatch. It means what is on the left and what is on the right of an assignment operator, that's an assignment operator in a program, don't match. Now, here's the rule. If what's on the left is a superclass, they don't have to match. But if what's on the left is a subclass, they do have to match. Is that confusing? If I have an object on the left, I can say object O equals V.LastElement because they're the same. Object doesn't have a superclass, so I can't do anything else. I'm stuck. I'm out of business. If I do this, you're going to get an illegal cast where you say I'm attempting to put an object into a student and they don't fit. So what I have to do is I have to typecast that. And the generic way of typecasting is you put parentheses and the data type you want. Now I've pulled the object out of here and stored it in the student object. So that's one way to do it. But I can also do it in the one swell swoop technique. And that's a little L. The compiler will scream at that code and your program will it'll come back and it'll say the object class doesn't have a getName method. You knew that. Remember, object has the one equals and hash table and notify all and wait, whatever. So what I have to do is I have to typecast this as student. So I do that because I'm new at this, and that's my first attempt. And the compiler screams at this. It doesn't have a get name. What am I really typecasting with this? What's the data type? Should this have worked? Yeah, the data type, remember the rule? The data type is what's on the far right. So even this much doesn't cut it, right? But what I really want to do is that. What this says is it says, get what's in there, cast that as a student, and just to be safe, I can do that. This says now, this expression here is a student. And a student does have a get name, and a get first is in get name. This gets the name, that gets the first name from the name object. Okay? When in doubt, parentheses are your friend. I just gave you an extra. You want even more? Well, if I take that out, it's the same as taking that out, right? I said I gave you an extra one. Well, if I take those out and put the other ones back in, what's the problem here? That's all right. This says, call last element, make it a student. And then you can put in that one as your extra. Take which extras you want. Okay. Whatever. The important thing is use parentheses with these things. Try and think through the expression. Say, what parentheses do I need? Make sure they balance left and right. What happens when they don't balance left and right? The error, you guys, is your uttermost favorite error. Type mismatch is your new favorite error, but your old favorite error was interface or class expected. Because you have a parenthesis or a double quote or a brace or something is mismatched and the compiler got down to the end and it goes, I don't know where I am anymore. And it's hoping for the best. In any case, the idea is here is we get an object, we convert it to a student. Once the object is a student, you can call its get name. Once you've got the name, you can call get first and get the string that you're really after. So with these vectors, you only want to store one data type in the vector. Later on, like 2 weeks from now when we do polymorphism, you'll see that you can store multiple data types from a hierarchy in the vector and actually make use of them easily. But for right now, we're just, for those of you who make a vector in assignment 4, one data type. Yeah. Well, in the type syntax, in the syntax for typecasting, you can't put a variable there. The compiler won't know what you're talking about. But there are ways when you have an object. Here's the beauty of Java, one of its subtle points. Every object has within it everything about it. You can find all of its methods, all of its access specifiers, all of its variables, all of the arguments to all of the methods, etc., etc., etc. That's a very powerful feature of the language. So each object carries all of this information about itself with it, which means that you can basically take an object apart at runtime and have your code respond to whichever parts you need to. That's what's used in Java Beans. You guys have heard about Java Beans, right? That's used for programming in pictures. If you go to JBuilder and you start up your program and you click the design button when you're working on assignment 5, you'll see that you actually get up a visual interface for designing the window and you can throw buttons and junk into it and it writes the code for you, right, RoboCoder? Just like with Visual Basic and Visual C++ and so on. We're going to hold off on that a while and learn to do it the hard way. Okay, so vectors, look in the handout, try it out, see what works, what doesn't work. Questions on any of this? See how this fits into. And what we'll do tomorrow night is tomorrow night I will give you assignment 5. You've been sitting here all night hoping I would tell you tonight, so I'm going to tell you tomorrow. What would be the fast way to find out? Vector V, V dot, and take a look at all of the methods. There may be other methods. When you guys are out coding, if you have open a internet browser and you have it on Google, you can actually type in Java class name, whatever the Java class name is, and it will give you back like a gazillion hits on these Java classes. And the nice thing is the hits that come in at the top usually have, without even having to link to one of those sites, they usually have what import you have to use. Right, so if I type Java vector class at Google, it would come back and I could just look at the little summary, and it would show me that it's in the Java util package, for example. And you can click on those links, and it will take you to the class definition, which has a list of all the methods, all the constructors, all the variables, along with program examples of how to use it. Very powerful to have these two tools going at the same time. Java was written by and for and on the internet, and it's fully documented online, interactively. There is so much documentation that you have to kind of throw things away to get at the good stuff. So I keep a list of, you know, bookmarks through the java.sun.com, slides.book, book tutorial, and that kind of thing. Okay? So that's enough. You guys should be able to do your assignments 4 now, and we'll be ready. We can devote the entire week next week. A reminder, I will not be here Thursday, but I will be here tomorrow. Next week will be devoted to assignment 5 and the midterm.